The next section is presenting the central and unique elements of Ajahn Chah's teachings, and Tanisra is one of the presenters for this. And so, as I said, she and Kitty Saro are now a couple. This is they were in the monastery around the same time. She was living in England in a Buddhist community at Oak Tree House when she first encountered Ajahn Chah on his visits to England in the late 70s. And she was part of the group with Ajahn Sundra, the first four women that took the monastic precepts under Ajahn Sumedho back in the early days in 1977. And she was also part of the first group that took the 10 precepts of the nuns, which was in 1983, and was in robes until 91. And then, so she's also been a layperson again for 10 years, and is resident in South Africa. And we're really grateful. Both she and Kitty Saro made a special trip to come over just for this weekend from South Africa. So this is the end of a 40-hour journey they made, and so we're really grateful that in the spirit of the forest tradition they threw reason to the wind. And
absolutely.
And we're greatly blessed to have them with us, and very delighted they made that effort. Also in this panel, and Paul Breiter will be speaking as well. Come forward. If you can,
should we share the mic?
If you can come up and sit beside and the mat beside Tanisra there. Yes. So just so the people, I've been told that people are having difficulty catching all the names. So again. Because we know these guys. So we forget that everyone else doesn't. Paul Breiter is currently living in Sonoma County, Santa Rosa, is a mailman there, current incarnation. But is also known in, more famous in the monastic circles as Varapanyo. There'll probably be a book of Varapanyo stories. The unexpurgated version. So I'll ask Tanisra to be the first one to speak in this group.
Okay. Thank you, Ajahn Amara. And greetings, everyone. I feel very blessed to be here. I think one of the reasons I'm here is to learn more about Ajahn Chah and to feel his presence as we talk about him together through this weekend. And that supports and nourishes us in our work in South Africa. And when we were first invited to participate in this conference immediately, as Ajahn Amara said, rationally we thought, no, there's no way that we can come from such a long distance to be with you all. And then we were on a month retreat in February, and as I was meditating, it became very kind of strong in my mind that we should just come. And then Kitty Saro had the same feeling. It felt just important to make it here, and it came from a place place of gratitude, a very profound sense of gratitude for the life of this person and the impact he'd had on both of our lives, and the introduction through him to the monastic life, which has been extremely profound for me and something I'm still working with and integrating my 12 years in that tradition, in the monastery, in the robes. And when I began to reflect, of course, we knew that we might be talking a little bit too about his impact and his life and our experience. And it's a long time ago that I actually met Ajahn Chah when he first came to England in 1977, and over 25 years. And that, you know, a lot of my memories from that time are not so vivid, but I realize the memories of the interactions that I had with Ajahn Chah were very present still in my mind, the conversations, all the things that he said. And I think primarily this, the presence. And my first image of my meeting with him was, I was on one of these very long retreats in those early years when we would sit unrelentingly, competing with each other to get enlightened in these endless, endless sort of Burmese retreats where one was very, very focused and very disciplined, getting up early. And I was with about 70 Westerners in a sitting in a retreat outside of Oxford. And it was Ajahn Chah's first visit to England. And halfway through this retreat, he and Ajahn Sumedho walked in to the Dharma Hall. And I had the impression of two beings that had walked in from another planet. I just felt the vibration, the energy, the appearance was just very mind-blowing to me. I just thought, what are these beings about? They communicated something that I felt was very important, but I didn't know what it was yet. And then the first thing that Ajahn Chah did, he came in, there was a very small, rather tatty little shrine in the corner of the meditation hall that none of us had paid much attention to. It was just there, a small Buddha sitting. We didn't even know what a Buddha Rupa was. Very much we were more interested in the real stuff, the sitting. And Ajahn Chah just came in and very simply bowed. He just put his palms together and did this bow. And for me, I felt that in that gesture, in that movement, it communicated almost a perfect response to human life. I thought, I'd never seen a bow before. And it was the first time I'd seen someone bow. And I thought, that is really the most perfect statement you can make in relationship to life. And it impressed me. It stayed with me. And so I snuck out of the retreat to find out where he was speaking and then went to listen. And which I think was a good move. And I think, as many people have said in the sharings today, that what was often communicated, perhaps even more than the words, was the quality of presence. And I felt, sitting there, I felt so uplifted just in his presence. I felt he had this enormous freedom and power in a way that one felt he was very fearless. I felt someone that was very fearless, that didn't need to please anyone, that was just totally comfortable in his skin, that was very complete, and was very present and joyful and light and free. And as Ajahn Amaro just said, it's not something one meets every day of the week. So I was very, and all of this in a way was communicated on an almost subliminal level. I wouldn't have actually articulated it in that way. It's just thinking back as to what that experience was. I realized those were the qualities that were communicated in his presence. And he gave a Dharma talk. And if you haven't heard a Dharma talk, as I hadn't really heard a Dharma talk, from someone that has that quality of presence, then it's a bit like you've been in a desert and you're a withered flower and someone comes with some water. And so I was really drinking in this talk, very simple, very direct. And I remember all the way through the talk thinking, this is really wonderful. This is so good. This is so good. And then at the end of the talk he said, well, if you've been listening to this and you think this is good or you think this is bad, then you haven't been listening properly. So then I thought, well, that's really good. I really like that. And I think, although I didn't have a long time to spend with Ajahn Chah, it wasn't so easy for me to be able to do that, although I tried, I did go to Thailand and try to be there. I think what communicated to me in this, just this simple communication, was one of the fundamental aspects of, I think, his teaching, which was to establish one in what one might call right view, which was beyond holding any particular view, but more a direct ability to meet life as it is. And for me, I think this was what he seemed to try and lead us into through his teaching again and again and through his example. So then another experience I had was, I was, as Ajahn Amaro said, living in a Buddhist community at that time, and we were trying our best to understand meditation, to practice, and we were very naive about the path and the way of enlightenment. We had very idealistic and naive notions about it. And we had invited Ajahn Chah, Ajahn Sumedho, to come and visit us. It's 1977. And we were getting the place ready for their visit. And we were sort of flying around with dusters and hoovers and cleaning up and trying to get the place ordered. And suddenly there was a knock at the door and we all stopped. And opened the door, and in came Ajahn Chah and Ajahn Sumedho. And again, this incredible timeless quality. I felt like we had been all moving in this time and busyness, getting things ready, very busy internally, and I just meeting that sense of someone that was stopped, someone that was still, someone that was very timeless. And he walked in and just sat there, and I went and sat next to him, which, of course, one of the etiquette, I didn't know about monk's etiquette, but I just went to sit next to him, and he just sat there, was very comfortable. And he just looked around the table at us all, and he just said in Thai, it was translated, "Have you had enough?" And it felt like he was talking to me in my more mythical way of looking at the world. I felt like he was talking like to someone that had been spinning around in samsara for eons and going, "Well, have you had enough yet?" You know, and it really landed in a very deep place within me. And it was like, yeah, it was, I think the Thai word is buah. Like, bu am I? Just like, are you disenchanted? Are you world weary? And this seemed to be a message that he really immediately communicated, and of course that then opened me to this possibility, this wonderful possibility of being able to enter the monastic life as a way of actually practicing and maybe working in a way that could perhaps allow me the possibility of perhaps having an inkling or understanding of how someone like Ajahn Chah had come to the understandings he had. And so I think one of his main methods was through the monastic training. And one of the things he used to say, I mean, he worked very much with suffering. His medium was, as we've heard, putting you in a situation of, or allowing the monastic life to put you in a situation of suffering, and then having to really meet that very directly. And one of the things he used to say was, I didn't hear that directly, but from what I heard, was when you're in a situation where you can't move forward or back or up or down, you can't move away from that experience of dukkha, that's when the practice really begins. And for me, having entered monasticism from a very idealistic place, as often people do, it was quite a wake-up call to be pushed into that kind of a corner, through the discipline, through the process of attrition, really. And then really, at that point, realizing that what this great master was really pointing towards, like this willingness to open to the experience of dukkha in a very direct and immediate way, and then through that, finding a totally alternative relationship to that experience, not having to run away from it, not having to suppress it, but realizing that one needed to inwardly let go, to release from one's grasping and one's desire for anything to be any other way than what it is. So it sounds very simple, but in a way to practice that is not so simple, not so easy. maybe it's simple, but it's not so easy. So I think this is worth for me another great teaching method of Ajahn Chah. And then also thinking about this subject, we're thinking this particular panel now about some of the teaching methods. The other one that I thought of just mentioning briefly was his encouragement for us to work as Sangha, to work as community, and how challenging that is for us as, particularly as Westerners, where we're so individualistic and so independent, and that particularly in the monastic form, it puts one over and over again into having to work in relationship, sometimes with people one doesn't always get on with, or to be with in situations one doesn't want to be with, and to learn to work with that more through wisdom. And I remember one of the things that Ajahn Sumedho told us, that when Ajahn Chah came to England the second time, 1979, already Chithurst Monastery had begun, and it was still very rudimentary and very basic. But we were living there, working there, and when Ajahn Chah came, he asked Ajahn Sumedho, is the community getting on well? Is everyone getting on well? Ajahn Sumedho said, yes, yes, we're getting on okay. And Ajahn Chah said, well, there's not going to be much wisdom here then, is there? So the last thought I'd like to finish my particular offering is that when someone asked about the, you know, continuing from this very precious teaching way of life to continue that in lay life, and for me definitely it's had an application. I realize in my life in South Africa it's not a very easy place to be. It sounds a bit like the northeast of Thailand where we are actually. It's very rural and very very extreme weather patterns, very poor. A lot of perhaps something that Northeast Thailand doesn't have. It has a lot of violence. We don't have wild tigers in forests, but we have lots of hijackings and murders, and so it feels a bit like living in a wild place. So we draw a lot. We draw a lot from the things that we learnt in the monastery, and I think a lot. I realise when we talk to people and share what we've learned, we find ourselves again and again talking about Ajahn Chah and thinking about him and how he practiced and the monks and nuns and the way of life, and you know, so it does inspire and nourish us. And so I think one of the things, I don't know, I sometimes wonder what it would have been if Ajahn Chah had actually been around longer through this transition of this ancient and wonderful tradition into the West. How you would have responded to issues like feminism and Buddhism or democracy and, you know, not such a strong emphasis on hierarchy or engaged Buddhism or interfaith or all the different issues, materialism that we've had to meet and negotiate and respond to. And I realize I don't really know. I don't know. But I think one of the two qualities that I think one would have really been communicated from him, if one had gone, that's what I feel, if one had gone and sat with him, sat at his feet and said, well, this is an issue, or this is a struggle, this is a problem, I think he would have, I really feel that he would have given one the sense of whatever the difficulty is, you can succeed. You can overcome that. You can work with it. You can learn to be wise and compassionate. And I also feel that he would give the feeling of everything being, even though however difficult it is, everything being okay, taking one to a place where in his presence there's a sense of okayness, a sense of peacefulness, a sense of perspective that allows a sense of inner space and inner freedom. So yeah, I think that's what I'd like to share for now. Thank you. Do you want to swap? Is that okay? Easy?